Good morning. It is Danger Dan here in the talk shop during some dangerous times. Not sure that any of us have ever experienced anything like this. It is, well, first and foremost, I hope you're not tuning into me to get any pertinent information on COVID-19, except for some of us, a lot of us, have some extra time to spend in the shop and work on our bikes. So let's take advantage of this and get some rad shit built, right? Today's episode was recorded in the old bike barn van at the Mint 400. My guest is Eric Westergaard of Built Well. You may have met him at one of the many events that Built Well has their fingers in. Or maybe you've just seen him on the internet riding inappropriate vehicles in inappropriate situations, which is the majority of what we talk about on today's episode. Eric, thanks for sitting down with me in my van studio. Now, dates. This is normally when I tell you about the dates of upcoming events that I will be at. Like this last one, Flat Out Friday and Mama Tried in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ended up being, you know, I guess somewhat of a bust because the race didn't happen and the show didn't go on. But I know Scott, Warren, and Jeremy did everything in their power to keep that from happening, but it was just out of their control. As many of you are experiencing now, there are things happening that are just out of our control, and all we can do is make the best of them. If you can't go to work, go to your shop. If your kids can't go to school, just tie them up to something, you know, preferably outside to a tree. It's probably good for them. Or maybe just let them free. Maybe you got some land. Maybe you don't. Maybe the government has some land by. You can just go let them free out there. The outdoors will do them good. March 27th and 28th is the Texas Time Traveling Chopper Show in New Braunfels, Texas, at Green Harley Davidson, presented by Jackson's Choppers. It is one of the few upcoming events that has not been canceled yet. So, you know, maybe you don't want to go experience the big crowds at that big show. You can still go camping down at the river. I believe me and my wife will be going to camp. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to this show. I'm not going to go fucking hang out with a bunch of dudes at a Harley Davidson dealership. But not because it's at a Harley Davidson dealership. Literally, I'm just going to socially isolate myself and take my wife camping elsewhere. Load the chopper up in a van. We're going to go find a river and we're going to camp by it. So, pretty excited about that. April 3rd through the 5th was the Texas Fandango. That has been canceled until 2021. April 17th, 18th, and 19th is the Mezcal Moto Rally, a three-day endurance race to Oaxaca, Mexico from Austin, Texas. A couple of the fellas putting on that event will be up here at my shop on Friday to tell us more about this event. I don't think they're going to let anybody shut them down. Memorial Day Rally in Red River, New Mexico. Don't know if that's happening. I think so. June 17th is the Gunstock Hill Climb at Laconia Bike Week in New Hampshire. This will be my first trip to the Northeast in quite some years. I'm excited. I am excited. June 27th to 28th is Born Free. You never heard of that? Born Free? July 16th, 17th, and 18th is the Run to Raton in Raton, New Mexico. JP, I cannot wait to see your pretty face. This show is brought to you by MCShopTees.com, your T-shirt of the month club, the only way to support every local motorcycle shop. Now, this is also a good way to replace the T-shirts that you have used in place of the toilet paper you cannot find at your local store. I have personally not been to the grocery store. Unfortunately for my wife, she has had to go. But I was talking to my friend Greg, and he said the craziest thing about going to the grocery store right now is everybody looking to see what's in your basket. you know, curious. What are you getting? What are you getting in this time of preparation? My dad, he is not happy with all the hoarders. But that dude, he only keeps like a day or two worth of shit in his house. He likes to just go to the grocery store all the time. So I don't know that I even, I mean, if you're stocking up on shit, yeah, it's maybe it's too bad that you waited to the last minute to do that. But who's to say you won't need 3 months worth of shit? We just don't know. We don't know. I can't imagine you will, but I don't really feel like you're out of the, you know, it's probably not a bad thing to have that much worth of shit. Am I a prepper? No, but we definitely have some freezers, and we definitely have some food in these freezers. Some of it I actually killed and put in there. But that being said, I've got soft material and I've got heavy material in men's sizes all the way up to 3X. That's a lot of material, you know, that you can get. A lot of bang for your buck in case you need to use it in the future. Men's, women's, and kids. You can buy 3 month, 6 month, and 12 month subscriptions or just sign up month to month. And my t-shirt company is taking extra precautions. They're not letting anybody up there. My t-shirt company, Legacy Merch, prints and ships. So if you're worried about my dirty ass touching your t-shirt, it doesn't happen anymore. So you're good there. The first shop I ever featured was Brown Cycles out of Dallas, Texas. They've been a family-owned and operated motorcycle shop since 1970. Red Eye's been there for 20 years building panheads, shovel heads, knuckleheads, flatheads, even race motors. The other two guys, Jake and Scott, are both veterans of the Afghan and Iraq war. Dude, and they will keep your shit on the road and rolling smoothly. Recently, they've got a new tool from Rack and Pull Industries called the Straight Shooter for front end power plant and swing arm alignment. It's got laser precision and can assess frame damage as well. Go to Brown Cycles at 5223 Military Parkway or check them out on the gram at Browns_Cycles. If you've got too many shirts and you don't want to support the show through MC Shop Tees and all the other shops, go to DangerDanceTalkShop.com and sign up to become a patron. There's a menu tab with links, click on Patreon support. And for as little as $5 a month, you can win a trip to Nepal. That's right. Every $5 a month, you get entered in a basket. I will draw a name at the end of the year, and somebody is going to Nepal to ride motorcycles with Motorcycle Sherpa. Thanks to Baron Booty, we are going to send somebody to the other side of the planet. I did it last year, and it was amazing. If you want to scroll back a few episodes, you can listen to the road shows I posted. And, dude, just hear about how amazing it was and know that you could win the most epic trip of your life for $5 a month. Go to DangerDanceTalkShop.com and sign up now. If you don't want to contribute $5 a month, but you still want a chance at winning some rad shit, I give away a knife made by Nick every single month, a handmade knife made by Nick. Knives made by Nick on the gram or knivesmadebynick.com. Go get your own knife now, dude. He can personalize them. He can do whatever you want, really. He's a bad motherfucker. Lowbrow Customs gives away a gift certificate and an auxiliary fuel tank a couple times a month. Actually, let's give away a Lowbrow package on this show. Stay tuned till the end. Go to lowbrowcustoms.com for all your chopper needs. Go to DangerDanceTalkShop.com and click on the Patreon support tab to be entered to win. After that, go to HighSeasJerky.com and buy some jerky, dude. What better way to stock up for the pending apocalypse than a bunch of jerky? HighSeasJerky.com. Use DangerDan at checkout for 15% off of your order. Dude, think that's all? Oh, go to TittiesForYourEars.com, too. Check that out. That's a good site. TittiesForYourEars.com. So, we find ourselves in dangerous times, as I was talking about earlier. And you know what I thought was a good idea? was to make my wife watch Outbreak with me. You remember that movie? Oh, fuck. It's actually a really good movie, just as I remember. Little bit creepy to watch right now. It'll help you cope with the idea of social distancing. You'll feel like that's not a bad idea after watching that movie. Yeah. And on the way back from Milwaukee, I did something even more crazy, and I went to Infowars.com to hear what Alex Jones has to say about what's going on. If you want to be entertained and fucking just blown away, go tune in, because that motherfucker is out of control. Out of control. But yeah, so, dude, Roland Sands is doing a coronavirus bike build-off, which I decided when I got back from Vegas and all this shit started going on that my race bike was going to turn into a coronavirus apocalyptic survival bike. That's right, dude. It's taking on a new form. And that's what I'm going to be doing over the next couple of weeks. I hope that you'll tune in on the gram, see how that takes shape. And if you're building a bike your own, dude, shoot me some pictures. Show me what you're working on. If the Mint 400 got you excited about building a dirt bike, I would suggest do that shit ASAP and start riding it around and get comfortable. And then keep riding it until you're fucking hurt all over. And then keep riding it. And then do that every day until you're in shape to ride fucking sand dunes for hours next year at the Mint 400. Trust me, you will fucking love it. If anybody has any wild ideas for my survival bike, shoot them my way. I'm all ears. I'm all interested in hearing and seeing what ideas you guys have for this bike. And maybe you want to build a bigger survival vehicle. Eric, my today's guest, he built an off-road vehicle out of a van, a Grand Caravan. He calls it the Grand Terravan. Go do something fun like that. Since your kids are home, dude, put them to work in your shop. I mean, just fucking use them as slave labor and make them grind shit, sand stuff, clean stuff. My kids are coming up to my shop today, and we are going to clean the fuck out of it. But enough of what you should be doing. How about you continue listening to this show? Let's hear what Eric Westergaard's got to say.
Westy. If I look down, I'm just checking it out. Don't think something's wrong.
All right.
Dude, how goes it?
Good, good.
Nice and rested?
Man, finally, yeah. Yeah.
So we're at the mid 400.
Yeah.
And neither one of us fucking did very good. Well, I wouldn't say we didn't do very good. We just didn't finish. That's it.
You did better than me. At least you got on the bike.
I got to ride. Well, and that's the thing, you know, racing a race like that with a partner. You know, there's always that chance that somebody doesn't get to fucking ride. Yeah. You know, Bear was going to come down and ride with me, and we were just going to flip to see who got to go first.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Flip a coin. All right.
More or less, because we were worried about like who was going to get to do the hard stuff at the end. We both wanted to do the second lap. I was like, well, we'll just flip for it. All right, watch the squeaking, dude. We're going to sound like we're on turntables in here, bro.
All right, so you got.
It is weird doing it in the van because there's like metal surfaces everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So that wasn't your first desert race, though, was it?
No. We went out 2018, did the Nora 1000.
So you rode the Nora?
Yep. Yeah, there were four of us that rode, and Rob Galan or Rouserworks, he was our mechanic.
Dude, isn't that dude a fucking hell of a mechanic?
Huh? Yeah, yeah,
he's
yeah.
Like, he's like ADD organized about shit, dude.
Absolutely.
I was sending the pictures of mine when I was doing it. And he starts like, well, you should do this, this, and this. Or he would ask me questions about this shit. I'm like, nah, bro. Like, those concerns are so far down on my priority list right now.
No, he is the right guy to have on our team.
But
he is OCD. And man, when we did Nora, We had team, broke it up into teams, Bill and I, days 1, 3, and 5, and then Chris Moeller and Otto were days 2 and 4, and mileage-wise, we all kind of worked out about the same. They had two longer days than we had, our three, and Rouser, every night, we'd pull that bike in the pits, and he'd just start going from head to toe. And
I think what's great is he like enjoys it. Like, oh, it seems like he like
man
enjoys
I think,
the process.
I think it's his favorite thing in the world.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's awesome.
He loves it.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and he's good at it.
All right, so you work with Biltwell. How long have you been with Biltwell?
Man, I've been with him since day one, 2006. But I was contracted for a long time. I used to work for a motocross company, and we were also doing BMX stuff.
Like you personally?
Yeah, I got hired on. We met through a friend, a guy that I had hired. I used to work in the IT industry, working on phone systems and computers and stuff.
Yeah.
And I hired this guy to help me. The company I worked for owned H&R Block, so we'd have to go to all these remote offices and work on their phone systems and that kind of stuff. And in my garage, I was doing stuff with pit bikes. This was 04, 05, you know, when the pit bike craze was going pretty hot, and I was doing different things, and I built this fully electric pit bike. Did 60 miles an hour.
Come on.
Yeah.
You are an IT guy.
Yeah, yeah. It was insane. I loved it. I was like, man, this pit bike thing is going to get shut down because neighborhoods are complaining. It's too much racing around the backyard. Everybody's doing high performance stuff, motor kits, engine kit stuff. And so I was like, man, it needs to be electric so it's quiet and you can still rip the backyard. And so I built this thing from the ground up, had a speed controller out of a golf cart, the motor was a Briggs & Stratton E-Tech, they called it, flat little pancake motor, and I put it into an aftermarket BBR frame, and it had like, I don't remember if it had Sano bombshell front forks or something like that, I forget what all the stuff was, and that thing ripped, and we went to Vegas and raced the Mini Moto Nationals. Come a buddy of mine on, jumped on it. Dude. Never
so
even
So you're racing
it.
With other gassers?
Yeah, 124 big bores and stuff, and my buddy had never even raced, and he missed qualifying for the main by one spot.
Holy
yeah, it ripped. It was so fast and so good.
And this was 2005,
2005. And then 2 years later, Zero came out and had like a couple of, like their electric pit bike class or electric motorcycle class. So I was a little too far ahead of the curve on that one, and it kind of bums me out because people missed it a little bit.
What's awesome is like, that's, I think, the coolest potential of the whole electric bike thing. It's like, being able to ride bikes where you couldn't ride them before.
Absolutely.
You know, like the stealthiness of them, you know, like, dude, this is the place you can go where people can't fucking hear you.
Yeah.
You know?
At least they won't complain about it.
Yeah.
You know, they won't complain that there's a bunch of kids ripping around all day long, you know, racing bikes.
Well,
I used to like
the whole fucking aftermarket pipe thing. And my buddy Joey was like, he just pointed out to me, like, dude, keep the stock muffler on there so we don't piss people off and we can keep doing this. And I was like, oh yeah, yeah, like that it, you know?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Even though I like bumming people out sometimes, like you don't want to make it much more difficult than it already is to ride bikes. Like, because we used to ride all around Fort Worth.
Okay.
Like around that same exact time, 2004, 2005, you know? And a cop cannot catch you on a mini bike. Like if a cop catches you on a mini bike, you deserve to be caught, you know?
right.
So
yeah, but everybody kept putting big bore kits in and more suspension and they're racing them. And I mean, they were loud and fast and some of these guys ripped. I mean, supercross riders just hauling ass.
I mean, it's still big now that the 110, you know, like they were at where were they at? They were at NASCAR this last week and had a mini bike fucking.
Yeah, it's kind of coming back a little bit.
Section. Like, that looked like a lot of fun, dude.
Yeah. I did all that, and a buddy Matt, he runs this thing called Camp Forlo now, a little off road adventures in Baja. And he is friends with Bill at Biltwell and Magoo. And so he said, hey, man, we've got these guys that I think you might want to talk to because I had hired Matt to do some of these IT things for me because that's what's his business.
Yeah.
But I needed someone that could go out and do remote work for me. And we just hit it off really well. And he's like, man, I used to race Baja and he used to race whatever class. He had a buggy that he used to race. And so I went and interviewed with Bill and those guys and started helping design motorcycle stuff and dirt bike and BMX stuff. And that's when they were talking about Biltwell, like, what do we call it? And that was kind of the... As it was growing, they're doing it on the conference table behind me, and they're like, "Hey, we need a few new products. You know, we're starting this thing." And I was doing CAD design, so I said, "All right, let's design whatever we need." And
that's
so we
awesome.
Did. We had forward controls back then. That was one of the first few things that we had done: exhaust kit, forward controls, and I think some grips to start.
Really?
Yeah.
Those were the first products.
Yeah, before helmets ever even came into the picture.
No shit. I thought the helmets was like.
Yeah.
I was riding back then, but I was not connected at all. Like I was like I had the pit bike back then. I don't even get a Harley till like 2010, but before that I had like a a Suzuki, but I just wasn't plugged in at all, dude. I missed the whole blog thing. And, dude, I just wasn't. I was out doing drugs and riding.
Right. Having a good time.
Yeah. So it wasn't helmets to begin with, huh?
No, no. And then we started, we came in, we had novelty helmets. That's kind of what put it, you know, that was all Bill and Magoo. I wasn't designing any of that or anything. They just basically said, man, we just want, we like the old school, you know, Bell style three-quarter helmets. And they weren't even making them anymore. And they said, let's bring that back. And everybody liked it. It was super low fit. They, you know, but they were novelty. They weren't intended to be worn, you know. It's, so they, you know, but it went crazy.
How does that work? I mean, like California's got a helmet law.
Yeah.
Like surely at some point they were like, oh, those helmets, three-quarter helmets aren't legal. Like was there ever a period where people like got in trouble for having them, or has it always been?
No, it basically was internal. And we were like, yeah, and I believe it was distributors that kind of said, hey, we want to sell your stuff, but you need to make some DOT helmet, make them DOT.
That makes sense.
And then we started looking at that side of it and said, yeah, we need these things to be DOT. And then we transitioned into DOT. And now we only make things that are at least DOT and ECE.
Oh, really? So there are no more like...
There's no more novelty stuff. Hasn't been for years. There might be some stragglers out there, but nothing out of our shop, out of our business. Yeah. So yeah, now everything's ECE because we've got distributors that are Europe like and stuff that require it, you know, and Australia is accepting it now. So it opens up the market quite a bit, and they're as safe as anything out there.
Yeah. Wow. So back to racing.
Yeah. My favorite.
Dude, these motherfuckers. Goddamn stunt riders. Were you racing pit bikes? You said your buddy was racing.
Man,
it.
A little bit. So I started out in the 80s. I was racing three-wheelers. Back
how fucking
day.
Old are you, bro?
51.
Damn.
Last month, about 1 month ago, I turned 51.
No shit. Well, happy fucking birthday.
Thanks. Trying to stay young. I just try
you're
to still have
racing
a good time.
Three wheelers.
Yep. 1984, 85.
I was born in 84. Dude, there's a guy on the street I live on. He had a fucking yellow Yamaha three wheeler the other day, and I jerked a wheel over. I was like, I'm going to buy that thing. I just assumed that it didn't run, that he'd pushed it out there. No, as soon as he like got all stoked and it had a starter button and he took off hauling ass down the road, I was like, well, I can't afford that. You know?
Right, it's got a starter button.
But I was thinking he would want like $1,000, but he wanted $1,700 for it. I was like, it's a fucking three-wheeler, bro. You can't do that.
My dad still has a ATC 250R, which is a Honda.
Yeah, that's the big red one.
The big red one, water-cooled. It was at the top of their game.
That was like when
things.
It went from, they put the suspension on the front, right? Because at first they were just rigid fronts.
Well, a lot of them, the smaller CC, but then when they went to 250s and started bringing out that two-stroke performance one, like 82 or 83, they had some suspension, but it was air-cooled. Then they went to the water-cooled. But 87 was at the height of, before it got, you know, the rug got pulled out and they got
banned. I was racing those dangerous
Dude,
motherfuckers, man.
That was my life. I stayed away from drugs and everything because I was like, man, if I start smoking weed, I start doing drugs, my dad's going to yank this carpet out. And I was having too much fun. I was 87 was when they were basically banned them because of all the injuries and the lawsuits and things from people getting hurt. Usually most of them weren't wearing helmets and they got drunk and got hurt. And then
did they ban the racing at the same time or just the production?
They
of them?
Banned the production, which just basically killed the racing because if they're not selling things, they're not, you know, the factory's pulled out. Yeah. I was 87. I was going to go pro. I had already beat some of the Team Honda guys.
Go pro racing three-wheelers?
Yeah, they had Team Honda, Kawasaki. Kawasaki had this guy, Jimmy White, was making six figures a year.
Where
was kicking
this at?
California, Washington, West Coast, East Coast. It was all over.
So you were racing the whole series out there?
It was a factory-supported thing. There were guys... Man, I still remember Team Honda. It was like Marty Hart, Steve Wright, and Tommy Gaines or Guyans. I forget how to pronounce his name. And, Mark Waxeldorfer, I'd beat a couple of guys and almost beat a couple of those guys in it, like enduro racing, and on a bike I'd never ridden. So I was like, I can do this.
Yeah, you're hanging.
That's what
dude.
I knew how to do, but I just, man,
so what
we're
kind
ride,
of tracks?
We're
riding. Were these like motocross tracks?
Some were motocross tracks. The best I did was like enduro type stuff. We're like up in Washington in Olympia area, Olympic National Forest, Grays Harbor, Thurston County, ORV Park. Man, they'd have, it was single track up in the woods and the mountains trails and stuff, and that's where we grew up going out play riding. So we'd go race up there and it'd be like hour and a half plus a lap, So it'd be an hour and a half of however many miles out on the motocross track, back up into the mountains and stuff. And then an hour and a half later, they throw the white flag, get one more lap. And that was it, man. I loved the long distance stuff. It was fun.
See, that's what I want to do more. Like this, what we did today was fun, but the sand is like, dude, it's just so much work. You know, like I would much rather be in the, like last summer, I spent a lot of time in northern New Mexico on the trail systems up there in the mountains. And it was, dude, on my XT500, like it's so much fucking fun up there in the woods. Like,
I love the woods. I'm in Southern California now. We don't really have that kind of riding, but man, I miss it. It's so much fun. Yeah.
What about up like there's a Northern California, there's some like,
yeah,
forest you can ride in, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely. And I just don't make it up there. I don't make it up there to ride. If we go somewhere to ride, it's usually Baja.
Yeah.
We head down to Baja. That's our favorite thing to do, is go down there, eat tacos, drink beer, and ride in Baja. And I got an XR650 that I it's my favorite bike ever. The suspension, everything's dialed now, and I can just haul ass. I love it.
Dude, I'm so stoked at how well this bike handled.
Yeah.
You know, like, on this, like, I can't imagine, like, riding it on shit that's not the sand. Like, it's a little bit tall. That's right. It's not even a complaint. Like, that's just.
Man, it has to be a little bit taller. You're just going to hit the skid pan over everything.
Yeah, and I don't even have one.
So it's even better that it's tall.
Yeah.
But, man, dude. When we built that, the Frijole.
Whose idea was that? Which one of you bright motherfuckers was like, let's take a fucking Sportster and race the desert? Because I think that you guys really set in motion the retardedness that happened yesterday.
Yeah, I think so. And how you just presented it was kind of how it happened around
a bunch of beers and tacos. Somebody was
drinking
like,
beer at Cuatro Casas. We're sitting around the campfire, and I don't know if it was Bill or Moeller or who brought it up, but somebody basically said that. They said, "Hey man, why don't we race the Nora on a Harley?" And everybody's like, "I'm in." And then, but
we had some easy pretense at the beginning. Right?
Yeah, we had some ideas, and it was like, okay, there's some ground rules. We need it to be a Harley. We can't just put a Harley motor into a dirt bike, which we could do. We wanted it to be a Harley. Harley tank, frame, swing arms, some things like that, and then add to that rather than just pulling the motor and putting it in a different chassis.
Yeah.
Because now you just got a Harley-powered dirt bike, which they are capable. And so we said, let's make a Harley as capable as we can within the limitations of being a Harley. And so we did, and we just kept evolving it and growing it, and we had ideas. Okay, we'll have a dirt bike front end, but geometry, swing arm, everything. So we had a company I used to do some suspension work, quads and things like that, and so Elka was the shocks I used to work on. So I got a hold of Roll Design in Temecula and said, or Fallbrook, sorry, and said, hey, we need some custom shocks. Here's what we're doing. Here's the geometries. Can you help me build some shocks that are set up for the weight, deal with the valving and stuff? And we're doing dual shocks. And so he helped us. He strengthened the swing arm, plated it and stuff. So we thought, man, Bill, having some Baja design or Baja experience, he's like, we're just going to bash this thing off of rocks. It has to be bulletproof. Yeah. So Doug at Roll helped us out and got the shocks pretty dialed. And then we had Bob at Precision Concepts deal with the front end. He said, we got a CRF 250 front end, but we got to have springs. We gotta have
This is where the neck's gotta be.
Yeah.
When it's
We want the angle to be kind of this because we're limited on how much travel we got. So we actually shortened the dirt bike forks and put heavier springs and made it so the geometry was right, and it handled pretty damn well.
I mean, everybody had shortened dirt bike front ends yesterday.
Yeah.
That's what I've got.
Yeah.
I mean, I
kind of have to, otherwise it's a chopper and it's,
I mean,
not,
I really built mine like I used what you guys did, and kind of this is my inversion of it. Really, yeah. Like, I mean,
The one we did, I mean, it was proof of concept. It worked.
Yeah.
You know, it was 1,300 miles in Baja, and we finished, you know? And so
I was worried about my swing arm, not because I didn't reinforce it, but because we welded the fucking half-inch plate to it. And I was like, it's going to break around where we welded it.
And you never know. It could. Man, there is nothing more brutal than this kind
of
racing.
Dude, some of those wheels yesterday, people were fucking their rear wheels up.
Oh, they get tacoed.
Dude,
yeah, it's
this
gnarly.
Is the fucking huge. This is 3.5 inches wide.
Right.
Which proved to be great, really.
But yeah, so that's kind of, man, the Frijole down there, that was sort of dropping shit. You know, that proof of concept seemed to work, and I was stoked to see 19 dudes in our class yesterday. It was
insane. How long did it take to go from idea to race?
Six months.
It was October. I thought I rushed things, dude. I had y'all's guidelines to go by.
It was October of 2017, and we said April 2018 is the race. Let's make it happen. And so Rouser started plugging away, and we'd all have our certain input, and it was 6 months until race day. And we even got some testing in out at Barstow, which Hodge Road is pretty well known for off-road testing because it's sandy, whooped out, gnarly. It's pretty comparable to a lot of stuff you'll run around in this area, you'll run into. And so we said, man, that's the best place for us to test. So we did. Shocks were way off. I ate shit on our last test day. Destroyed our nav. We've got video of it somewhere. Me swapping out in a whoop section and just over the bars. And yeah, it was gnarly. And I was really glad I had, you know, my knee protection and stuff on, because I probably wouldn't have been able to race. It would have destroyed my knees. I had big gashes in the plastic because the rocks out there are jagged and nasty. Yeah, it was gnarly. I was like, all right, there's my wake-up call.
See, I didn't get to
back it down a little bit.
Do any of that.
Yeah.
No. If I would have had time, there's nothing, no place in Texas I know of to do any testing. And then when they were so late, I was like, even if I go test it and break something, then I might not have time to fix it and go to the race.
Right.
So I was like, I just need to go to the race. Just get there. If I break it on the course, okay.
Man, and some of it's just try to finish. If you have the mentality, it's...
Well, dude, Mike Otto said the best thing ever, and I think it really helped me out, was he was just like, just remember that the bike's the weakest link. Like, sure, you're capable of charging through all this shit, but...
Right.
Is your bike gonna make it charging through everything?
Absolutely.
Dude, so I was in the back. Like, everybody took off. Now, I wasn't trying to just let everybody take off, but I literally, that was the first time I got to pin it, you know? It was at the starting line.
Yeah.
But then being in the back, everything's okay, and then we get to the rocks where everybody was still pinning it, and I caught up to everybody because they probably laid all their shit over.
That's the biggest thing with desert and off-road racing is, like, man, just... You're going to catch those guys because they're going to swap out, they're going to break, or something's going to happen, and you're just going to pick them off. And you go down one time, and you might as well have been riding at 80% instead of 100% because you would have just caught yourself. You know, you lose so much time when you go down, so you back it down and get through stuff, and you do a lot better. You end up a lot better. Yeah. And our job, when we first started the Nora, I started it. It was two teams, Bill and I, day one. It was like, we called it Team Alpha and Bravo. So it was like, I'd start and Bill would finish the day. And then the next day, Otto would start and Moeller would finish.
And Moeller's, how many miles were you guys doing a day?
It was 1,300 miles total over 5 days. So I think it was like 250 miles a day. And so each of us, like the first day, I think I might have done 85 miles. And Bill did 90, or I did 120 one day, and he did 60, or vice versa. It was just depending on where it made sense for a rider handoff.
So around 100 miles a person each time.
Oh yeah, easily. Some of them were more. I think Moeller had 180 mile day or something, like a Wednesday or something on like day two or four. He had a huge. He was out there for 6 hours. Straight 6 or 8 hours before he even got to hand the bike off. It was crazy. Moeller's from S&M BMX, and he can ride. He's a great rider, and we all of us just team orders were, man, just back it down. We don't have to haul ass. Let's just finish. And you know, it was crazy. There was some reality checks there too. You know, one dude got killed on the course. You know, I was helping.
While you guys are racing?
Oh yeah, I ran up to the guy. I came up, and there were a couple other bikes already stopped. I could tell there was a really bad accident between a bike and a quad. And came up, stopped, and I'm giving the guy water out of my hydration pack. The guy was just laid out and hurting. We're sitting there. We waited, and it didn't even take that long until the ambulance or a rescue guy showed up, and we got him on a cart and the stretcher, and we didn't find out to the award ceremony the next day that he didn't make it. And it was a big reality check that, man, this shit is gnarly. You know, people don't realize, think you're out just playing in the dirt. It's like, no, people get hurt. I mean, it's real, you know?
Well, yesterday, so, you know, had some troubles.
Yeah.
Going the last pit, I showed up, my motor's making all sorts of noises. But I felt like, you know, there's a chance I can make at least a lap.
Yeah,
if I could have finished a lap, I could have decided then if we needed to keep going. But I left there. And dude, the motor just started not working real good. And it was getting, like, the less the motor worked good, it was the harder for me to, because it wouldn't pin, you know, like, right. I'd twist the throttle and it wasn't, wasn't reacting. So anyways, I looked down and my oil cap was coming off. And fuck, I look up and wad in the sand, go over right. the handlebars, hit my head. And I'm like, oh fuck, you know, like, and I'm looking at my bike, like, I gotta get this up. And I don't even know why I was just thinking, like, I don't want somebody to wreck because I'm right here, right?
Right.
Even though I was off, I wasn't even on the trail, but I know that, like, people look over, you know.
Yeah.
I didn't want somebody to fuck up like I did.
Right.
Before I could even finish that thought, here comes a dirt bike, dude. He made it past me, and I'm watching him like, damn, he's hauling. And as soon as I started thinking he's hauling ass, that back end started kicking. He flew over the handlebars, and the bike just started cartwheeling. And I was like, oh, my God, dude. And I ran over there, and I was just glad to see him jump up and start trying to move his bike himself.
Right.
And I was like, okay, so, like, right. all of his things are working. You know?
Right, right. He's yeah. Fuck.
So yeah. I got over there, and I was like, dude, take a breather. And I start pulling his bike out of the yucca, and he yeah. was okay. But I was just like, you know. These motherfuckers are rolling.
Oh, yeah. And, man, in Nora, we had a system. It was a GPS thing that tracked the bikes and the cars and everything. And we shared some of the same course. So the guys in the afternoon had to worry about trophy trucks and buggies and stuff catching them because of just our speed versus theirs.
Yeah.
And, man, there were a couple of times that, you know, Moeller said it was the scariest thing ever. You know, it fucking... you know, trophy truck with 2,000 horsepower barreling down on you, all of a sudden the GPS thing pops up on your dash and it says pass, like there's somebody on your ass, and he knows it wasn't a bike, so he jumps over and these things come screaming by. He's like, it's terrifying, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, if this guy didn't see you, he just run over you. He wouldn't know.
No.
You know, and you're stuck in a silt bed or something, and silt is a whole nother thing. That I don't think there's any silt out here on this course this time, but silt is, it's gnarly. It's talcum powder. It is shit.
Yeah, no, I didn't see
yeah,
that.
No,
but I know getting passed by some of those dudes was gnarly. Like, the first couple guys that passed me, like, I mean, they were flying by me before I even knew they were there.
Right.
And then I got to, like, one point where they were coming in a little bit slower. I could hear them. And one of the first guys, I tried to get out of the way, which even I know as a racer, you just hold your line. Like,
right.
let the guy passing you do the work.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, this fucking big-ass hard, I need to get out of the way. Dude, I get up out of their way and then almost fall into them because I'm off the trail now where it's like even more. There's like trees and fucking yucca.
Yeah.
I was just like, it just reminded me, like, yeah, just hold your line.
Hold your line. Man, those yucca plants will take you out, too.
Yeah,
they do. If they're not dead, man, they will grab your foot peg and put you over the bars.
Dude,
those things do not
when
move.
I was getting hauled out, one of them fucking clicked me into gear and just, dude.
Right.
Getting hauled out of there? Dude, so, okay, first off, my GPS quit working, so
right.
nobody knew I was out there. I had to, like, luckily I had my phone. I was able to get some shit going. The first guy showed up, he's on a KTM. He's like, all right, I'm here to get you out. I'm like,
he's gonna tow this?
Yeah, like, what? You are? Like, with what? He's like, this bike. So he's got like a fucking 6 foot strap. No, it's not even 6, it's like fucking 4 foot. Like, he puts it on his left foot peg and we put it on my right foot peg. My front tire is right by his leg.
Oh, really? Not even behind him, it's your
no,
alongside.
Like, I'm having to like keep from running into him, okay?
Right.
So he and it hauled way better than I thought it would, but we had to stay off the sand trails. I can stay on the hard pack where all the fucking plants were. So, like, at one point, a yucca nailed my shit and put it in gear, and it just... Now I'm, like, sliding sideways trying not to take him out, you know? Like, flip. Because if this shit would have fell on his dirt bike, like, he...
Take
and,
it both
like,
out.
Everything would have yeah. gotten hurt.
Yeah.
So then we get to a Jeep, right? He sees a Jeep. He unhooks. He's like, I'm going to go get that Jeep. And I'm thinking, sick, like, this will be a lot easier to tow behind or something. Get the Jeep. They can only stay on the trail, right? So
right.
now we're on the sand. They got, like, a 15-foot tow strap, and they hook it around my neck, like, around the bottom tree in the neck.
Right.
I'm like, cool, take it easy. We'll get out of here. They fucking take off. Just pulling the front of my bike into the sand. And now it's harder than even riding. And I'm just like, oh. Oh shit, you know, like, and I told the dude, I was like, you know, both, like, the son, like, you, one of you just gotta be watching me, dude, like,
right.
fucking, as soon as we took off, they pulled me into the ground. Take off again, I'm like, going. So they think they're good to go. They start hauling ass. So then, now they're throwing up sand and dust at me, and all I can see is their Jeep going like this, dude, and I ate shit fucking hard, dude. Truck behind me sees that, and this lady jumps out, and she's like, no, 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 I can't let you do this. We're going to help you get back. And I'm like, sick, let's put it in your truck. Nope, that's not an option. The truck's filled with, like, fucking first aid shit. But he's got one of these things that you strap your front tire to.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you drag the rear one.
Okay.
Which, you know, that's kind of sketchy with the big-ass heavy Harley that's jacked up this tall, you know?
So you're still then, on the bike?
No, no. Oh, this okay. is no, me and the side. But so we put the front wheel on this deal. And he's got a fucking, like, a good, solid ratchet strap. She's got, like, a chintzy one. They start strapping together, and he just keeps on cranking. She can't keep up. Now my bike's just, like, leaned over to the side, and I'm, like, having to tell them how to do this. And finally we get it situated, and I'm like, I don't think this is going to work, guys. Like, we need to – no, no, we've done – we've never had a bike fall. So we get in the truck, and we start going. Bike falls, dude. I'm like, hey, stop, stop. And he's just like, what? You know, and, like, hesitates for a minute. The bike's just, like, being drugged. Go back there, put it back up, restrap it differently, not much longer. He just takes off. Like, the guy, like, not even looking in the mirrors. And these are volunteers, so bless their heart. They were just trying to help, but my bike got more fucked up. You know, like, that rear peg set, like, the handlebars, the bark busters, everything got bit, like.
That one's supposed to be coming straight out there?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just, you know. I couldn't believe that shit. My bike got so destroyed. But at least I got out of there. I mean, I could have been the guy going, man, I wonder. I mean, now I know why they told me to keep 2 days worth of food in my pack.
Yeah.
You know? Because
yeah, you don't know.
If I wouldn't have had my phone, I wouldn't have been able to tell anybody that I was out there. And the like, during on the first, at the beginning of the first lap, some sweepers came through. And so I just assumed that the sweepers would come back through, but no.
They didn't?
No, they did not come back through. Oh, my gosh, dude. That would have been bad. And I was worried about that coming out here, like not having a vehicle to come out on the track to get me if something happened, you know?
Yeah.
But then I noticed most people didn't, so surely there's a way. And that's how they do it. They just drag your bike back.
Right.
On its whether side. It's on its wheels or not, right. They just drag it back.
Yeah.
Did you guys have something on the Nora, like a big-ass fucking trophy truck, or I mean, what?
No, we had Bill's Tundra, Autos Tacoma. We had some four-wheel drive rigs. We had another truck, I forget what it was, but we actually had a couple of friends of Biltwell that you know, they're firemen, so we had kind of our own medic team if we needed for some reason. But
nice.
Man, everybody's juggling gas stops, and because we ran the Harley tank, we didn't have near the range that like some of the dirt bikes and stuff had, so we'd have to pit like every 60 miles instead of 120 or something.
Yeah,
so we had to have guys that could leapfrog and work their way down the peninsula. And
well, see, the logistics of that race you guys did seem like they were probably harder than getting the bike down there.
Absolutely. That was all Bill. Bill knows that stuff. He's done it for years. He used to chase for a guy named Ron Brandt that used to off-road. You know, he had buggies. He had whatever class buggies he had. And, man, so Bill, from a teenager on up, has Baja racing in his blood. And so he knew how that worked. He knew the logistics. He had three-ring binders with here's the rider swaps, here's where it. None of us had ever desert raced before other than Bill in a car. None of us had done it on a dirt bike.
So you had never... I'd
never even ridden a Harley before that, except for maybe a...
Westy, come on. No, hold on, Westy. You've never ridden a Harley before?
I've never ridden
a Harley.
Never
dirt bike.
In the dirt,
you
especially.
Were like, fuck Harleys. Oh, you're going to make a dirt bike out of one?
I'm in. Whatever. I don't care. I will race anything. I'll go out and race flat track if I can get a bike together for the stupid thing. I don't care. I will race because I enjoy competition. I enjoy, and I know what my abilities are, whether they're good or bad. I know what the limits are, so I can keep within that and stay fairly safe. And I can make some lap times.
I mean, and that's
how
you can continue racing for a long time is if you realize that to race yourself. You
know, I don't want to get hurt. Yeah. I'm too old for that shit. I'll break a hip. I'll die from pneumonia or
something
nowadays.
I'm
getting to that age.
Bikes, like flat tracking is everybody else is on them too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You,
yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
And they don't bounce off of each other like dirt bikes.
No. So it's but yeah, no, that was our first experience. None of us had raced desert on anything. and let alone a Harley.
I bet Bill was stoked when all of you guys were in for that.
So we were all in, and like I said, it was around a campfire. Somebody's like, let's do this. And we're like, I just raised my hand, said, I'm in. Whatever it is, I'm in. Let's do it. I didn't care if you wanted to run a bagger. I'd be like, fuck it, let's go. I'll give it a shot. I don't care.
So what's up with the next trip that I've seen the pictures of this fucking giant monstrosity of a rig?
The LMTV, the military vehicle. Yeah. I don't have anything to do with that, and frankly, it sounds terrible. Sounds like a miserable trip. Riding on the Alcan Highway on choppers to the North Pole sounds miserable, but Bill loves misery. He wants to do it. There's guys signed up for it. They're going to have a good time. And I don't know, man. And if he asked me, I'd say, fuck it. I'd grab that XS650. And that's where you and I met, was on El Diablo run. I had that little XS650 chopper. I'd say, fuck it. I'll ride that. But, man, it got to be gone a month. And my schedule just isn't going to allow for that.
Are they doing that this year?
Yeah, this summer. Yeah, so that big LMTV military vehicle is going to be the chase rig. It's got a big box on the back now that can haul, that can put bikes and gear inside. It's not going to be like an RV with sink and stove or anything like that. It's going to basically be a utility box to put bikes in and put gear in and gas cans and tires and parts and whatever, and that's what it's going to be. And so a couple friends of ours, Yeti and YOLO, off-road people, the Jeep family, they live off-road. They've done this stuff forever. They're full-time adventurers for... They did it for 18 months or something, just lived out of their Jeep and their adventure trailer, and they're resilient badasses.
Yeah.
And, so they're going to drive this thing and do chase. And Yeti's good fabricator, and he's going to get that LMTV kitted out and ready for this adventure. And they're going to drive chase, and it's going to be documented. And they're riding choppers to go somewhere and, you know, dunk their junk in the water and then turn around and start coming home. You know, they're going to be gone for a month. They're going to do it in the ice and, you know, pull some Wim Hof shit or something. And but I'm not involved in it. I'll be looking at it from the outside.
Have you seen those dudes that went from Prudhoe Bay down to Tierra del Fuego on KLRs?
Uh-uh.
You haven't
seen
that?
No, I haven't seen that. No.
So there's only a couple of videos out. Like, they videoed the whole thing. There's like a movie or some shit. I've been talking to him about being on the podcast, and it was like army, like five Army Rangers.
Really? Okay.
On four KLRs.
Really? All right.
Started out in so that they could go through the rainforest at the right time. They had to start off in the winter at Prudhoe Bay, so they were all they had sidecars at the beginning of the trip, riding through the ice with like all heated gear.
Really?
They crossed the fucking what's the place right there south of where Robert's at? The jungle that you can't go through.
Oh.
Something gap. The Darien Gap.
Okay.
They went through the Darien Gap on those bikes, like, literally with the machete, hacking the way.
Getting trees out of the way so they could get through.
And, like, putting them on,
damn,
like, what do you call them? Zip lines to get them across rivers.
What?
Dude, yeah, like, there's no road through there. Wow. And they fucking... So, when I'm talking to this guy, he lives in Colorado now, I'm like, hey, he was like, you want to come to the house and do the podcast? I'm like, fuck yeah, I want to, like, see these bikes. And he's like, well, there's only one left.
Okay.
One of them we left in the rainforest. One of them we sold on the black market once we got out of the rainforest. And then the other one or two we left down in Tierra del Fuego and only brought one bag.
Right.
But I was like, fuck, dude, they just that's left great. One of them in the jungle, like, dude. In the small video that I've seen, it's like, dude, they're just pushing it through the, like, the things don't even,
that's gnarly.
They've got like Indian people, like the locals, helping them push these motorcycles through the forest.
Wow, that's crazy.
Seems fucking miserable, dude.
Cool.
But it seems like Bill's aware of, like, there's two kinds of fun, right? There's a kind that you have, like, in the moment where, like, as you're riding your bike, you're like, this is fun. Then there's like the miserable kind that you don't, it doesn't seem like fun until months later.
Right, like you know, look,
like,
back on
like
it.
Like Nora, I'm sure you look back like, oh, that was a great time. But like when you're out there just like trying not to get ran over by a trophy truck, you're like, what the fuck am I doing out
right,
here?
Right, right. There was a few times, man, I really, you know, I keep saying it, I've said it before to those guys. I'm like, man, I think I kind of got lucky because the sections that I happened to have were amazing. And there's this cactus forest down south of Guerrero Negro, and it's just like they plowed this dirt road through these 20-30 foot cactus, and you couldn't even see through them. It was like a forest of cactus. fifth gear, just tapped, just sliding around corners. And I'm like, if I go off the track, I'm gonna impale myself on the side of a cactus that's the size of an oak tree. You know, that's I'm just insane, like, holy shit. But in that moment, it's fun as shit. And then you get in this technical stuff. Bike's falling over. You can't hurt. Fuck, 500 pounds. You're trying to pick back up, and your foot's slipping in the sand, and you're tired and pissed off. And those are the moments you're like, "What the fuck am I doing out here?" But it's still, it was a good time. Yeah. And then even months now, fuck, years later, it's a year and a half, two years later now, and we're still glowing from because it was rad as shit.
Well, like, you know, I've been on a couple of trips that are just fucking torrential downpours, and it's like it takes like a few months before I look back and go, oh, that was fun. You know, like when you talk about it with your buddy that you did it with, you don't even want to talk about it for months. You're like, no, I don't even want to relive that. And then the year goes by and you're like, damn, that was sick when we fucking went through the rain. And
Yeah. Sometimes, I mean, we've been in the snow, we've been in hail and shit. It's just like, oh, what are we doing?
Dude, well, I mean, and that happens to me on my chopper where I get to a point on the trip where I'm like hoping that it breaks.
for the relaxation,
so that like, I can just stop fucking riding. Yeah. Like, all right, I have to call a tow truck. You know, like, I can't go anymore. You know, like but because you're not gonna like stop. Like even yesterday, I was like 95% sure my motor wasn't gonna make it till the finish line, and they told me this is the biggest gap. Like this is the biggest section where there's nobody out there. There's no pits.
Right.
The smarter part of me was like, you don't need to go. The motor's not going to make it. But I'm not going to stop racing when the motor still worked.
Right.
You know, like,
go until it stops working. Because it might get you to that end. And if it did get you to the end, man, then you're stoked.
Yeah. Then I would have sent Carlos off to fail.
Right.
It's doing great, Carlos. Ignore those noises.
We had this guy, Kevin. He was doing Nora. He was on a XR 600, and I swapped out on the Friuli, ate shit on this corner behind a bush in the sand, whoops. And I was like, fuck, did some dude's gonna come flying around this corner and I'm gonna be laying in the middle and then he's gonna eat shit and all. So I waved him down and he stopped. He helped me get the bike up. And he first thing out of his mouth, fuck, this thing is heavy as shit. You know, we're picking it up.
It is.
And I saw him at the finish, Nora. He finished too. And I saw him at the finish. And he come across the line, he's up there, a little celebration, he grabs a handful of throttle just to bounce it off the rev limiter, like, woo, you know? And that thing just seized up tight, right there on the finish line, and everybody's just like, holy shit, if this thing was 2 miles longer, he might not have made it, you know?
Oh my God.
So, yeah, it was good. It's he was like, fuck.
And when you guys finished that race, you're at the tip.
We were in San Jose del Cabo, almost Cabo San Lucas, basically at the tip.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like this where you, like,
It wasn't a loop.
Finish.
Yeah, it wasn't a loop. It was end to end. So we had to have that logistics figured out all the way to the tip, basically. And man, it worked out. Everybody, even us riders who hadn't done that, even our chase guys had never chased before. But Bill had it so dialed, like, man, here's where you need to be. And we think it's going to take 3 hours to get there. You know, just make sure you're there for gas and stuff like that. And everybody hit their marks. Everybody was where they needed to be. Man, looking at maps, and Rob and I were in chase one time, and we're like, fuck, we think it's right here. And then we talked to some guy on the side of the road. We're like, man, is this kind of this area? Are we in the right spot? He's like, no, you got to go down the road. And oh, shit. So then we got down there, and then that's where we needed to be. If we'd have missed that, we'd have, you know, screwed the rider, auto, or whatever was on it. We wouldn't have been there for the pit. So, man, a lot of it was just figuring it out as we go. But having those things dialed so well, it was like, okay, we need to be here. We just got to figure out how to get there.
Yeah.
Dirt roads or whatever it took.
So you guys going to do that again?
Man, so I think it's Mike Perlman who owns Nora. He was in our booth the other day at Contingency. And Bill's like,
what's that Contingency?
Contingency is, it was out on Fremont, and that's where all the booths are out. People are showing their wares, and, you know, they're showing off their company. You know, it's your 10 by 10 or 20, whatever, showing off your tires and all that stuff and what you do and talking to people. And so Perlman comes in, and I think I got the name right, and he remembered us from doing the Harley down there because we're the only guys stupid enough to do something like that. And he wants us back. And Bill's like, oh, yeah, I don't know. And he's like, no, I want you guys to come back. And I said, Bill, let's do it. You know, and so I think he's going to be talked into it. I'm hoping so because, man, it's so much fun. And they got the Nora 500, which is a loop. And I think it's Ensenada, 250 miles back to Ensenada. And then you do two loops. So it's kind of like this one. And but it's 500 miles, and the logistics for that are a lot easier because you just figure out a couple of pit stops and have dudes just waiting. Yeah. And then the bike just has to get there. Those guys don't have to drive another 130 miles to another spot and then wait, you know, for something that's on a map. You just post up and
wait. I think what was cool, like, with this race, and I don't know how planned out it was, but, like, the Heat Wave guys, you know, they had fucking tools. They had gas. They had water. They were helping out every hooligan bike that came through. You know, like, and that would be cool to, like, have, you know, if we all contributed. Like, all right, hey, we all want to do this. Like, let's, you know.
Just have a pit.
Yeah, have a pit that's got, like, shit for these stupid Harleys, you know? Yeah,
and that might be the way to do it.
And that way, and that seems more like, you know, doing a loop sounds a lot easier logistically. Oh, yeah,
and that.
And we all help each other out.
Absolutely intrigued on that, you know, and I'm all for it.
And that's part of the Nora, or that's something?
That is Nora, and they have, so they started that up. They did the Nora 1000, which started in the 60s, I think.
Okay.
And then it went away and came back, and then bikes started again last year because it had been cars for the last 20 years. And then bikes came back last year for the first time in like 20 years. And so now it's maybe I'm confusing that with the Mint. Maybe that was.
They've
both been going for a long time. Yeah. But so Nora started this Nora 500, which I think it's another way for them to bring in more people because it's the logistics are easier. So you can bring in a newer crowd of riders and drivers and things like that, that it just makes it a little less expensive, a little easier to do.
Yep.
And it, you know, they do the 1000 in April, May-ish, and then this one's like October. So it just gives you another opportunity. It's like the score stuff. You know, they do Baja 250 and the 500 and the 1000, and they've got points. I don't know if Nora does points for them, but they do bikes and stuff one day, or they do like two 250-mile loops, and the cars go one direction and the bikes go the other, and the next day they switch and then they go the other direction, the other course, I'll call it.
Yeah. So what's the difference between, I thought you guys did the Baja 1000.
No.
I learned later on, but at first I thought it was the Baja 1000. Yeah, I didn't know there was another race down there.
No, the Baja 1000 is green flag to checkered flag. You haul ass, you go as fast as you can and try it. It's, you know, you're on the fastest motorcycles. It's an 18-hour ride. You know, they're hauling ass, and it takes them 18 hours. You have 32 hours to finish the Baja 1000. When they hit the green flag and you go, you got 32 hours or 36 hours to finish it. Some people don't even make that time slot. So it's it's a day and a half of just cranking. You know, you're hauling ass. Your pit guy's got to be where you're going to be. So Nora is a stage rally. So each day, it's 5 days, and each day you have a start and a finish line. So like first day, we start Ensenada and we go to San Felipe, up and over the mountains and whatever, and then San Felipe. Gotcha. And then the next day it's San Felipe to where, you know, back and forth across the peninsula.
Yeah, that seems like a lot more.
It was a lot more realistic,
yeah,
you know, because we could work on the bike each day and kind of check it out, make sure shit wasn't falling off or broken, check the oil, change it, whatever. So Rob was pretty much the guy. We'd pull that thing in and he'd start the bike apart.
So you guys built a bike with a spare part. So I'm assuming you took a whole bike's worth of spare parts
with you. Yeah, if you're on a Honda, the CRF 450 or something, they're everywhere in Mexico. You can go to the Honda pits and say, I need to buy a wheel set from you guys, and they'll probably have it, you know, or whatever. They'll probably have spare parts. Nobody down there has Harley. So we had to make sure we had enough shit to fix our own shit, because you weren't going to buy Harley parts in Mexico. You know, so that was why we had all these extra pieces. Mm-hmm. And so we even had an extra motor stuffed and tied into the car in case we blew the motor sky, because you can't switch bikes, but you can take the motor out and put a new motor in. So we had front ends, we had wheel sets, we had all this stuff. And then when we got done, we're like, what are we going to do with this? Oh, let's build another one, but let's make it lighter weight. Let's make it more hooligan hill climb and just fuck around. We'll have a plate on it, street legal, so we can take it to lunch once in a while or just kind of go play on it.
Yep.
And then Mark calls us up and says, hey, we got some support, we got some eyes on this, and we're gonna do the Mint and we want you guys in. And Bill said, hey, I guess we're racing the Mint. Yeah. You know, it was like, we weren't planning on it, but it was like, I'm in. And he goes, I already got your name down, because he knows I'm in no matter what. Yeah, I don't care what the bad idea is. I got a stupid minivan.
And I want to talk about that too. But this has already created a new bad idea, like, that I've come up with.
Yeah.
Not that I'm probably the only one to have this idea, but I mean, I think what's next?
Oh, with this stuff?
Yeah.
Man, I don't even know.
The Dakar, dude.
Oh no.
Let's go race through the desert on the other side of the planet.
No way. Have you seen the Dakar? Have you actually watched the sand dunes and shit? They have to go. These things wouldn't go.
We don't have to do it on the Harley.
Yeah, no. I'd do it on something else.
Just going over there and doing that would
doing
be
it
so
would be
insane.
Doing it would be insane. I jump on a, Africa Twin or something like that, or KTM. If anyone's listening, let me know. let's do it, but not the air cool. You're gonna have to have water cooling. You're gonna have, that is gnarly shit. That's the hardest stuff over there, and it's 2 weeks of that shit of what you did yesterday for lap and a half, whatever anybody did. It man, and sand dunes stuff. It's you're talking weeks.
These fucking dickheads out here fucking with me now. Yeah, it's a lot more.
I think it's 14 days.
Sick.
Oh yeah, no, it'd be insane.
So do you watch the Dakar? I didn't follow it as much as I wanted to, but holy shit.
Every year, I don't watch it all the time, but I follow it on an app. And
yeah.
Dakar, they end up with a new app every year, and it's one of the best apps I've ever seen. And you can track, Honda, Ricky Brabec this year killed it. Toby Price, he's number one last year. So now those two guys are they're the best guys in the world for this stuff. And it's insane. So the app, you can follow along, you can see who's doing what and where they're at. And they have video clips and photos, and you can kind of do live tracking. I mean, the app's insane. So around December, I always download that new version of the app just so I can follow the race, because it's pretty cool to just kind of keep a pulse on it.
That shit, their fucking racing is so gnarly.
Yeah,
dude.
It is,
so
man.
Fucking gnarly.
Yeah, it is.
And have you been over there?
Nope, never been.
I've never even ridden a bike on a sand dune.
I have, dirt bike I have.
Yeah.
But you've got to put a paddle on the stupid thing if you want to play like I do. I mean, it's dirt bikes, they got momentum. Those guys they're ripping. And you watch videos of Toby Price and those guys, and they're next level, man.
Did you see the video of fucking Virus ripping yesterday?
Dude, we were watching it live in the VIP area. We kind of snuck into the tent. Bill and I are having a beer. I was like, hey, that's Mikey. And he was shredding. And I see this dust cloud in front of his tire. I was like, I think he's catching bikes, And it was a helicopter footage. And that thing panned out and backed away. And there was two modern dirt bikes in front of him that he was catching. I was like, fuck, he is hauling ass, man. Looked like he was just fifth gear pinned. I was like, holy shit.
Fucking bad. That dude is a fucking beast, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. That was so cool to see. I wish I could have something for that guy. Next year. Mikey, I'm coming for you, dude.
Oh, that's a bold fucking statement right there, dude. I just want to finish next year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fucked, dude. So rad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so what's up with the fucking minivan racing, dude?
my Grand Caravan.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, my Grand Caravan. My kid named it the Grand Caravan, so that's what we call it. And, it wasn't even a race. Gambler 500. You take a $500 piece of shit and you... inappropriate car and you take it off road. See, there's a theme with my life. Take inappropriate things and you do off road things with them. So, I flew up to Washington with my kids. We did family vacation last summer. My buddy had this minivan. I said, what's up with this minivan? I don't have tickets to fly home. I was just going to buy a car and drive it home and sell it or something like that. Save some money or recoup some money. And, fuck, need an alternator. And, I put a new belt and oil change and stuff. And he's like, fuck, it's good. So drove it home, tried to sell it online. Nobody wants to buy a minivan in Southern California, and I think it was in great shape. And then Bill said, why don't you, Magoo was gonna buy it and just take it to the Crash Up Derby. He said, I'll buy it for $700 and we'll just go smash up at the Derby or something like that and just have some fun for a night. And I was like, man, I think you're gonna have a big target on you and everybody's gonna try to kill you in their giant, Cadillacs and stuff.
I would.
Yeah, absolutely. See, a minivan is like fucking soccer moms going down. And then I said, you're going to end up dying. You're going to shove that motor into your kneecaps. I was like, that's not a good idea. So Bill said, how about the Gambler? I was like, fuck, all right. So I ripped all the doors off it and put some tubing on and netting on it and put 33s on it. And it's awesome.
Any suspension work at all?
None. The only change I did is I got rid of the stock front McPherson struts because the spring's too big. So there's tire clearance
McPherson
issues.
McPherson struts? What the fuck is that?
Pretty much any family car has a McPherson strut front end. It's like the steering and the suspension's kind of tied together.
Okay.
It's super popular, but nobody knows about it because it's just kind of ubiquitous.
Who's this McPherson guy?
Some guy that developed it.
Okay.
In the 60s. I don't know. But
obviously not a race car
so I couldn't just bolt a shock from like a Toyota Tundra or something on there. I had to actually have something that would work with the steering and everything. And so it had to be something similar. So I just went to the junkyard and found some with smaller springs and some gave me a little more clearance for the tires because I had 33-inch tires on it. Because the guy I worked with, Christian, who rode yesterday, he has a mobile tire thing that he does. Trailer with balancer mounting. He can show up in a parking lot and completely put tires on anything. And so he said, yeah, I got these 33s that are takeoffs off something. And I was like, sweet. So went to, I said, I need some wheels, 16-inch wheels. So we bought wheels and bolted them on. And I just put spacers on to clear it. And I just, you know, made it work. So there isn't really any mods other than trying to make clearance so the tires don't rub.
Yeah.
And man, that thing, we did the Mojave Trail, 138 miles. Did the whole thing. We were e-braking down through the dry lake bed, sideways through the riverbed and corners. And man, it was one of the funnest weekends I've ever had. It was so rad.
In a fucking minivan.
In a minivan. Dude. And it's got its own little, I got a hashtag, you know, hashtag Grand Terravan, and it's kind of getting its own thing. People love it. It's a good time. And it's the street legal.
So what kind
of race
is the Gambler 500?
It's not even a race. It's an event. But it's like Stewards of the Desert kind of thing. So you go out and there's 50 other people in inappropriate. There's Miatas and there's BMWs and Lexus lifted with off-road tires and all the shit. And you go out and kind of clean up the desert and you go have a good time and then try to pick up trash while you're out there. And, you know, it's just, and then you party, you drive out somewhere Saturday night, you party, and then Sunday you kind of drive back and you've, you know, tried to clean up the desert a little bit on the way.
Nice.
So yeah, it's fun. It's just stupid fun with like-minded people.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, that thing's fun. My kid just turned 16 and he wanted it for his first car. I was like, man, you need a real car. This is not, I said, you can take it to school once in a while. I said, you know, some girl in Orange County that wants to ride that. She's fun this should be fun to hang out with because the Orange County girls are going to want him to drive a BMW. They don't want to hang out with those girls anyways.
Yeah, that's a good way to find the right girl.
Yeah.
So I just seen all the bugs 2 days ago. I've got a Volkswagen sitting in my lot, and I'm like, dude,
Bill.
That seems feasible.
Talk to Bill. It wouldn't take much, I don't think, to talk Bill into a Class 11. He wants to do it as much as I do. So
what's that?
Class 11's the stock bugs.
Really?
Yeah, the little Volkswagen bugs that you saw out there, yeah. The ones that weren't all modded out and lifted and crazy box. Just looked like a bug that's kind of the front end might be sitting with a leveling kit, front end's up a little higher. That's Class 11. It's basically a stock bug. They beef up the chassis and do a few things, but you have to use like stock suspension, the arms and things like that. And man, it's more stupid ideas that are just fun, you know?
Yeah.
But I think Bill would be easy to talk into that because he loves that shit. And so do I.
Yeah, we were talking about, you know, doing it again next year. And then also, why not do that while we're here, you know?
Yeah.
Like, heaven forbid you, two of you hanging out in the fucking car just railing together.
Yeah. No, that'd be
desert.
Fun.
I mean, gonna come out anyways.
Yeah, you might as
be
well.
Be sick to like have the fucking the race bike on top of the bug and haul it here,
you know,
where it's all just, and then we can do the parade, you know, with the bike on top.
Bike mounted to the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I love it. I love all of it.
Yeah. So it's fucking, dude. Yeah, the bug thing might actually happen.
Nice. So what your Peru thing, when's that happening?
So there's a race it's like a race rally kind of, it's really just a moving party is what it's going to be, I think. from Austin, Texas down to Oaxaca called the Mezcal Moto Rally.
Okay.
And that's April 17th, 18th, and 19th. And I've been wanting to go visit one of my friends down in Peru for years, right? Well, now he fucking lives in Colorado. He doesn't even live there anymore.
Right.
But he's flying down there at the end of April, and I'm just going to take advantage of this bike I built.
This bad boy, yeah.
And go down and visit Rob in Panama, eat some fish, maybe hit some waves.
Yeah, get some surf in.
And then take a boat from there over to Ecuador and ride down to Peru where my friend's got a family down there. You know, he married a girl. So her family's down there. The tentative plan is now is to get down there, visit him,
he's wanting to set up some ayahuasca tours down there. You know, like a company where you go down there and eat the drugs. Right. So I'm going to go down there and help him eat the drugs. I mean, my goal is I just want to ride the rainforest, you know, like go Machu Picchu.
Right.
Yeah. Man, that'd be sick, right? You know, ride through Colombia and Ecuador. You know, there's this girl named Janelle, and she rides for Rolling Sands, an Indian. She's been down there. Like, she rode through Colombia all last year. She's, like, fighting animal trafficking.
Oh, okay.
Like, people who are finding endangered animals and selling them on the black market. So she's been fighting that and riding a fucking tricked-out Indian around. I'm like, damn, if this beautiful girl can do it, like, it must not be that bad. And from what I gather, Colombia's not like it used to be. It's, you know, and I think one thing that's happening is, like, the younger people are coming into power, and they're, like, they realize that, like, cops fucking with somebody on the bike, it's like they put that on the internet. Well, then there's like thousands of less bikers that will come through and bring money.
Right.
You know, like, so they've actually put out statements to the government like, hey, don't fuck with them. You know, like, it's doing a lot more bad things, you know, and so things are changing down there, and I want to ride down there. So that's the plan, really. And she's actually riding up here in April. So I'll probably meet up with her on the way down there or on the way up.
Kind of in passing.
I want to do a podcast with her and talk about that. She, you know, what she does, how she's ridden all down there. And there's a bunch of dangerous ass roads down there I want to ride. Nice. You know, and
man, there's dangerous roads.
And
everywhere.
So I'm going to end up leaving. Like, I can't just spend months down there. So I want to ride down to Peru, meet my buddy, leave the bike with his family, come back, then go back down there, do some ride, and just pretty much this will be my South America bike.
Nice.
That's kind of like my vision. You know, there's some logistics with leaving it in places, and, you know, like, it can't, you know, there's a lot more to it than just...
Because of licensing and registrations and that kind of... Exactly. Yeah, Rob's told me a little bit about that. He deals with that stuff with Panama,
so I might end up. It might end up, like, I might have to find... Like, it might end up just being in Peru. Like, I might sign it over to his family.
Right.
Or, you know... I don't know. I'm up for options. Yeah. But what would be cool is to, like, slowly make my way down Tierra del Fuego and then either throw it on a ship and send it somewhere. Like, it'd be cool to, like, just send it to Africa. Like, all right, well, now I'll do another country and just, like, do these podcasts. Like, I did a podcast. I'm working on, like, getting it down to where I can talk in the helmet, you know? And, like, people do a lot of vlogging and videos, and which is great stuff, but... The podcast, you don't have to watch anything, you just listen. And I did it on the track yesterday. I was taking phone calls and doing just talking about how gnarly the track was, you know. And hopefully my listeners will like that. I mean, the road shows are, you know, people, if I don't put out a road show after a few weeks, like through the winter time, people start sending messages.
Right.
Like,
come on, man, where
you're
is
like
it?
Hey, you know, we enjoy you talking to these other goofballs, but we want a fucking road show.
Nice.
So it'd be cool to do some off-road road shows. I'd like to also do the Pan American Trail. Is that the one that goes?
Yeah, that's...
No, the Pan's north and south. Trans-America.
Yeah, it's, you know, like from Oregon to Pennsylvania or something.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. Yeah. And then my XT500, I'm working on getting it in better shape because it's just bone stock, and I want to keep that appearance.
Right.
But I'm going to get it dialed in. I found this trail system called the East Texas 450. It's just a 450-mile loop of mainly, like, just dirt roads and fire roads. Not, like, any single track or anything. You know, you can drive a car down all of it. But I'd like to start doing... Dude, I love riding off-road so much. And
Me too. That's my favorite thing. I love it.
Just
camping off-road, just pack up and go. And we've talked about that Trans-America Trail, too. Like, doing that. I mean, I've downloaded the map. I know where it is.
I mean, Doug did it on an Ultra Classic.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it's...
Doug did it on a fucking Ultra Classic with a sidecar.
Right.
I could take this on that trail.
Absolutely.
You know? And that may be what I do. I've already kind of made an arrangement to buy a whole nother Sportster.
Yeah.
So, you know, fuck, I might build another off-road bike to keep up. That's the other thing now, is now that I've done this and I had so much fun, I'm like, do I really want to leave this one? You know, like, maybe I should just... And I am. This whole trip is evolving pretty fast. Maybe I just ride down and see Rob and then come back and then, like, just fly to South America because there's a lot of bike rental companies and
and ride down there but have this here or up here
like ride to Rob and then ride back, you know, like ride down there to the Darien Gap and then come back, and then I don't know, I just had so much fun on this. Now I'm really rethinking.
Yeah. No, man, they're a blast for sure.
I mean, I guess you guys built another one. I guess I could, you know, I don't have enough spare parts to build another one yet, but I'm really stoked that the guys that did my front end, I found this kid named Derek, thanks to my friend Lance. And dude, I mean, they did the custom springs. I told them what I was, I showed them y'all stuff, what you guys did. And then I told them where, you know, I had put these in place. I didn't get these shocks till like 2 weeks ago.
Really?
So I just had metal struts. And I was like, this is kind of what he's like, starts asking me the spring rate, like all this shit. I'm like, I don't even have them. I don't, you know, like they were going to send me some custom ones and then ended up just sending me these, which is fine. But he ended up doing the front end with custom springs that he had made in Oklahoma. Yeah. Then he revalved it and made spacers to make up for the, he put a lot of work into it.
Oh yeah.
And it fucking rode amazing. Yeah, like it rode like a dirt bike, except for the weight of having, you know, having that much weight this high off the ground makes for that center of gravity. Like,
man, I keep telling people, it's like steering a boat. You kind of turn and then it sort of reacts a little bit after, and you kind of correct the other way, and it just, you just pay attention, you know, because it doesn't, you can't just like put your foot down and spin the thing.
It's like absolutely. A sea-doo, you
yeah,
know?
Absolutely. Like, on a boat, you know, it reacts a little bit after you do, and, you know, you're not flicking it around like a modern dirt bike.
But I was really stoked. You know, and I got Gigastat to kind of set up the triple tree setup.
Yeah, we had Tim do our top clamp, and then for these forks.
No, I literally followed y'all's lead on everything.
Yeah, the heavy springs, and you just have to, you know, it's otherwise they'll just bottom out everywhere, but it works out pretty well. Makes the bikes pretty fun to ride, for sure.
It definitely does. I don't think that they need to be this high. Maybe for the race, maybe for that shit we did yesterday, but to build a fun off-road Sportster, it would be handier if it wasn't quite this tall.
Yeah, you don't need it this tall for most riding, but this stuff,
yeah,
the ground clearance is nice.
I mean, you have to be as tall as me. Like, I'm probably the shortest person that can ride this bike comfortably.
Right. Yeah, it's tall for sure.
How tall are you?
6 foot.
Yeah, so yeah, right about there. Well, dude, they're starting to race. Let's go watch it.
Sounds good.
Cover everything. We miss anything?
Man, I think so. It's been fun.
What's next for Biltwell?
Man, we've got a few things in the works we're riding excited about.
Riding the North Pole.
Some of them are riding choppers to that, you know. We're just try to ride more.
You guys got some new stuff in the works too, right?
Yeah.
You showed me something secret earlier.
Yeah, it's top secret right now, but you know, I wanted to get you a little bit excited. People will be stoked. We got a lot of stuff. Later this year, we should have a lot of new stuff that people would be pretty excited about. So I'm looking forward to that.
All right, and if people want to follow the fucking Grand Terravan, hashtag Grand Terravan.
Grand Terravan, just like the dirt, T-E-R-R-A, Grand Terravan. Yeah, it's fun. I'm gonna actually, I had some artwork done by Epoch Design, Alan Close, and friend of Biltwell's, and it's pretty rad artwork, and I'm gonna have t-shirts and stuff, so you know, it'll help me fund, if I sell any, probably just to friends and family, but it'll help me fund some new stuff, maybe put some different tires on it, and I fell in love with the car. It's stupid ass vehicle that I fell in love with, and I probably won't get rid of it for quite a while. Unless price is always, if someone comes up and says, man, I want this thing, it's like, you know, everything's for sale, the price is right. But otherwise, it's actually kids. I throw the kids in it, take them to school once in a while. Everybody looks, and it's just fun.
So it's still plated and legal?
It's plated legal. All the lights work, windshield wiper on it, everything. It's got a windshield, all the doors, sliders, the back hatch, everything's off. If you do look up the hashtag on Instagram, you'll see it, and it does not look like any minivan you've ever seen.
That's awesome.
So,
that's awesome.
But yeah, just keep going, trying to set examples for my kid. Go, you know, experiences over things.
Have fun.
You know, have fun.
Inappropriate things are funner.
Fuck yeah, it really is.
Thanks, Westy.
Thanks, brother.
Fucking A, man.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. I hope that this COVID-19 doesn't have you down. Hope you're taking advantage of the time that it has created. And you're staying the fuck away from people if you get sick, dude. Should fucking stay the fuck away from people when you get sick anyhow. Maybe not, dude. Whatever. Hey, if you're a racer and you're looking to race, we are working on a COVID-19 race. For racers only, hit me up if you're interested. Hooligan, flat track. Dude, shoot me a message. I got the deets for ya. Let's give away some Lowbrow Customs swag. Let's go hit generate 98. Generate, hit 98. 98 was the generate. And 98 is Jason Picard. Oh, perfect. No address. Jason Picard. I will email you, but you just won a Lowbrow Customs gift pack. I do appreciate you for donating to the show. Every dollar, man, it really goes a long way. Like, literally, I can go pretty far on a dollar. It covers a lot of miles in my chopper or my COVID-19 apocalyptic survival bike. I think I might just call it the C-19, the COVID-19 destroyer. C-19 destroyer. C-19 slayer. COVID C-19 destroyer. I like that. Anyhow, dude, go to DangerDanceTalkShop.com and sign up to become a patron. Get your chance at winning a knife made by Nick or a trip to Nepal thanks to Motorcycle Sherpa or more Lowbrow Custom swag. MCShopTees.com for all your t-shirt and TP needs. Brown Cycles to get your shit aligned with laser precision or anything else you can dream up. Dude, thanks to everybody else who helped me build this recent bike, dude. It really turned out way better than I thought it could have. Pretty fucking stoked. And I would suggest going home and watching Outbreak. Feel like that'll do you good. So, dangerous times with Danger Dan. Signing out.